It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The stumble bum play that you hit the Bears with.
Did you like that one?
You like that?
It was clever.
You like that?
Right now, Jason Leisure, Dan Wiederer, they're just sharpening knives.
Jason Leisure.
I will fight Chris Emma in Starbucks. I will fight him in a Panera, a Dunkin' Donuts, a Quiznos, a White Hen, a Schlotsky's. Name the time, name the place. I'll be there, Chris Emma.
Sounds good.
Bears reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
That's Potsy's way. Like, if you ask him anything. I remember I once asked him if he was more of a... Because I saw that he had some kind of animal hair or fur on his jacket or something, or his hoodie. And I remember asking him if he had dogs or cats. And Potsy goes, that's too personal. He is so engaging and friendly and lovable to everybody in that media room, except for me and Patrick Finley. Maybe that's why he took the buyout.
Jason Leisure with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Jason Leisure covers the Bears for the Sun-Times. He does a great job doing it. It's been an interesting week. We like talking to him about everything that is NFL and the Bears, and he joins us now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Hey, Mr. Leisure, how are you?
What's going on, Loho? We got Matt with us, too?
Yeah, there he is.
I'm right here. Thank you. Thank you for asking and noticing. God love you, Mr. Leisure. We're all here. How are you, buddy?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
We're doing really well, I think, and we're going to be off to Vegas tomorrow after we do the midday show. They were nice.
Why
enough.
Do I never get to go? You guys do this all the time, and there's never been any kind of, hey, do you want to come with?
I didn't feel like Vegas is your type of town, but I
love Vegas.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't really gamble or party or any of those fun things, but the weather's always good. The hotels are awesome, and the restaurants are awesome.
Wait a minute. Wasn't your last trip to Las Vegas you staying at the Tropicana as it was, like, ready to be bulldozed the next day or something like that?
It was the very end. It was the final days of the Tropicana. And when I say the hotels are awesome, I don't mean the Tropicana, although that is the one that I have most frequently stayed at because it's a Hilton property, and I have Hilton rewards or whatever, but... Matt, I was staying at the Tropicana, kind of on the south end of the strip, across from the castle one. What's the castle one?
Excalibur,
yeah. The medieval
Excalibur
one. And they were demolishing it
Excalibur.
after that week. And you could tell. Everybody had pretty much checked out. It rained. This was Super Bowl week last year. It was pouring rain all week. I've never seen that in Vegas. And it was dripping through the ceiling, and nobody even like put a bucket out in the hallway for it. It was apocalyptic.
Yeah, but there's something uniquely American about a decay when it's surrounded by all of the Vegas absurdity. Like, there's just, it really is. It really speaks to our decline as an empire while bigger and shinier things are going up right next door.
Have you ever seen those eerie photos of defunct Olympic venues?
Oh, yeah. Like in Salt Lake City and.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It was like living inside one of those for 10 days.
Oh, yeah, man. Those. And have you ever seen the photos of like old theme parks that have been overgrown? That's. Yes. Woo. Talk about uniquely American. But you know what else is uniquely American? Wait for it, everybody. The Chicago Bears are uniquely American. Thank you very much. Drive safely, everyone.
Does America want that to be American? I mean, is America happy when that's on their TV on Monday night or Thursday night or Sunday night?
They will be this year. They will be happy this year, my friend. It's coming. It's coming. And we spent a lot of time talking about the defensive line last hour, and like Dio Odengbo as a stout defensive end who can, you know, swallow up some pressure in terms of holding his ground and let some Dennis Allen creativity going around him to bring pass rush. If he's not bringing the pass rush himself, he can still be a part of it with some defensive creativity. What's the perfect kind of D lineman to add to this mix? Should the Bears be going that way with their first pick in the draft? What's the perfect kind of D lineman to add in?
Well, I would go left tackle with the first pick, with the number 10 overall pick, and then I would look for defensive line help in the second round. But if you want to go defensive tackle early, that's not crazy. That wouldn't be my priority. The Bears have all these top priorities. You can't have multiple top priority. You can't be all of these things are our top priority. You got to pick one. And I would say that left tackle is the one that they should most quickly and successfully address. But if you want a defensive tackle, you need one that's going to get pass rush pressure. They've gotten, if you've watched their defensive line, which has been the worst in the NFL over the last 3 years, has had the fewest sacks in the NFL, they're not getting pressure from really anywhere but Montez Sweat. You have to be forcing pressure from every part of that offensive line. You have to have somebody opposite Montez Sweat, and you have to be making some headway in the middle.
You wrote about offseason spending in the Sun-Times and all of the things that it's done and how it has to, you have to make sure that all of that works to elevate Caleb Williams. When you really went back and dissected it, how did you feel about what they've done and whether it will put Caleb in a better position to learn and win?
I think with every team, you're looking when they bring in a bunch of talent in the offseason or spend a lot of money in the offseason, you are looking at a best case scenario, which is usually what the team imagines, and then a worst case scenario, which is incredibly pessimistic, and it's probably not going to be either one. It's probably going to fall somewhere in the middle. It's not likely that all five of these guys that they brought in on big contracts are all going to stay healthy and perform up to those contracts. But if it's mostly right, and especially as it pertains to Caleb Williams, if it's right with the three offensive linemen, if Jonah Jackson is really the player that he used to be in Detroit and not the player who was injured last year trying to play center for the Rams, and if Joe Tooney still has everything in the tank and is still just as good as he's been the last few years, even though he's 32, I think, when the season starts, then that's huge for Caleb Williams. It totally changes the equation for him. But everything affects Caleb Williams. And if you have a bunch of the, indirectly or directly, if you have a bunch of these signings or acquisitions, even if they're on defense, that don't play up to the contract, then that hurts you in other ways, and it'll hurt you on game days in the sense of you don't want Caleb Williams playing from behind all the time, which is what he ended up doing a lot last year. and you're in obvious passing situations all the time, which is probably the hardest thing in the NFL, is to complete passes consistently in obvious passing situations. And you also are kind of, you're wasting salary cap dollars that are really, really important.
You know, he did a great job in the fourth quarter last year, and a lot of those times in obvious passing situations. So that gives me some hope in that regard. But it's going to be a fascinating dynamic, Jason. I think we're going to end up focusing, it's odd to say, but a lot more on Caleb's learning curve as it relates to winning this year, because I think they're going to like really try and do what they should have done last year, which is to trust him to make big plays when he can, but really just kind of let the offense do its thing in terms of running the ball and let the scheme do its thing. And really, what it, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Caleb to make really good choices within structure. And we haven't seen him be forced to do that often because of how chaotic things often were last year. It's going to be really interesting to focus on him in structure this year.
And it's going to be interesting to see how much of a process it is to adapt to this offense for him, because throwing a new offense at a rookie quarterback, or now to be his second year, you wonder how much really was gained from that first year. You hope that there was something gained, because you certainly didn't get a lot from the coaching. You hope that there was something gained from the game experience, from seeing Brian Flores' defense twice, even if it didn't go well. One of the games it did, one of the games it didn't. You hope that all the looks, all the ways that veteran defensive players try to trick you by showing one thing and then cutting off a passing route, a passing lane at the last second after you're already releasing the ball. You hope that there's some game knowledge that is built up, but they could end up retooling quite a bit with him in terms of the way he views the game, the throws that are predominantly part of this offense, and footwork and timing and things like that. Obviously, the terminology is going to be all new.
Yeah.
It will be interesting to see how quickly he adapts to that, because while that is good for him in the long run, do you want this guy coached by Ben Johnson as opposed to Shane Waldron? But it's a process when you're first learning that offense.
No, absolutely. And this is kind of just as much as going into last year. The thought is that this is a competitive window right now. Like, let's go ahead, kid. So we'll be watching. I wonder if year one in a brand new offense with all this stuff is going to be akin learning curve to the rookie year last year. You know, I wonder if it's going to be similar.
It can't be quite that. I mean, there's so many things you learn. I think it's really going to be similar to that, but with a head start from the game experience. Because one of the things you have to learn as a college quarterback going into the pros is how much quicker defensive backs will close on what looks like an open player. And like the target is smaller, and you have to recognize it quicker. And you learn that some of these throws that you got away with in college are not going to fly here, even against the bad teams. There's just not ever going to be that kind of disparity in talent like there is when you're playing at USC and you're playing Western Colorado State or somebody like that. So hopefully he's banked some of that. And one of the things I like about Caleb Williams, and that makes me like his chances of adapting to this quickly and adapting well, is he's super smart. He's so intelligent, and he's so serious and so hungry to get better that there's no question to me he's going to put in the time and the effort to try to get it. I would have said pretty similar things about Justin Fields and Mitch Trubisky. Those guys did not struggle because they were screw-ups. They were hard workers and guys that tried to put in the time and the effort to get it, and it just didn't click. So it has to be more than that. You have to be that talented, and you have to be that fast at processing a defense in 2.5 seconds or whatever it ends up being. But I like that Caleb Williams goes into it with some humility and realizing very objectively about his own game that there is a lot of room to grow here.
You've covered the league for a long time. I'd love to know how you view what's happening with both Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins.
I think they're both not as good as they think they are. And I think they're both, especially Rodgers. Rodgers is an aging quarterback, and you really probably should be done in most cases by now. And certainly, if not done, clearly in decline. And you look a lot of times at some of the exceptions, like Tom Brady playing well to 45 or something like that, or even some guys like Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, were breaking down physically late in their career, but they either had the right talent around them, or they were able to, they were so smart that they could compensate for that for a little while. But it's pretty normal to decline at that age. And Aaron Rodgers is obviously, to me, in decline. If you look at the last few years, between health and his play when he's been healthy for the last three seasons, this is the end.
You know, it's a good point about those other guys who aged gracefully and succeeded. You know what else they had? Really good partners schematically and coaching-wise. Like, you know, Brady getting to work with Bruce Arians, and, you know, and Brees getting to go as long as he did with Peyton. You know, Aaron thought, I guess he thought he was going to have that with Nathaniel Hackett, but that went boom. So now trying to do it again, like on a one-year deal in Pittsburgh or anywhere, like you got to be personally compatible and a really good teammate. And Lord knows, we know he's not that.
And with those two guys, Spiegs, the same injury. And I know that people, the science has come a long way, and you can get back. But when you're either over 40 or closing in on 40, that particular injury is really difficult to be yourself. And so it always struck me. And Rodgers' numbers are not terrible. That doesn't mean that he played well, but his numbers suggest that he could still be a viable quarterback. But I think that Jason's on it. I think in both cases, you have two guys that have so much invested in themselves that it sometimes makes it difficult for them to see the big picture.
I love that Kirk Cousins is going to be on the second edition of Quarterback, the Netflix documentary, since he had such a star turn in the first. So maybe staying alive, Jason, for one more year on somebody's bench or wherever lets him have another media star turn in the documentary.
Well, it's already filmed, though. So it's going to be like we're going to get to see him get benched for Michael Penix. So it should be very interesting to watch.
It'll be really interesting if they were in the room with him when they drafted Michael Penix. And actually, I'd turn that around and ask you guys what you think about that. Atlanta pays him all this money, pays him clearly long-term starting quarterback money, 4 years, $160 million. Uh-huh. Then turns around the next month and drafts somebody in the top 10. Shock to Kirk Cousins. Nobody clued him in on that until the last second. And now they won't let him go because he's a pretty decent backup plan. And you're not really paying anything for Michael Penix. So $40 million plus not very much for two quarterbacks. Do you think Atlanta has really done him wrong here, or do you think that's just good business by Atlanta?
I thought it was a really weird move at the time, and I still think that them signing him to big money was terrible. The word on the street is that Kirk doesn't want the Mike Glennon moment, and so he's okay with being traded, but he wants to wait until the draft is done before he moves out here and is like, yeah, you can go ahead and trade me. He wants to kind of pick where there isn't a quarterback necessarily lurking to take the job away from him.
You know the big winner, guys, and all that bad money that's sitting there on Kirk Cousins' contract.
Ryan Pace.
No?
No.
I'm going to say Ryan Poles, because they couldn't afford to sign Drew Dahlman, and they had to cut Grady Jarrett.
Yep.
So the Bears swoop in and get a veteran, proven beast in the middle of both the offensive line and the defensive line because of all that wasted money on Kirk Cousins. So thank you, Atlanta.
I felt like you were thanking Ryan Pace at the draft, too, that they snatched up another quarterback that no one was expecting another quarterback to go before the Bears pick. And that
you're right.
Rome Odunze to sit there for them.
You're absolutely right. So Ryan Pace continues to do solids.
I would say on the topic of Aaron Rodgers, too, you know, I don't get the impression that he's easy to work with. And
I think that is spot on. And I think
there's
his
a sliding
badness,
scale.
Oh, yeah.
There's a sliding scale of how much of that you will tolerate, and it correlates
to how great you are,
how well you can still play. And 5 years ago, I think I would sign up to put up with all the Aaron Rodgers related headaches to win. I think now you're signing up for the headaches, and I don't know if he's still got it.
Jason, as always, we appreciate your time. Love that cap. Talk to you soon.
See you guys.
See you, man. Yeah, that sliding scale of your bag alert, your bag factor, your personal bag factor, as it correlates to your excellence, is one that we have seen play out in a lot of different ways in our sports and media space.
We need to take a break. When we come back, let's talk some baseball. The Cubs are actually playing right now. Ben Brown had a nice outing against Atlanta. 4 1/3 was really sharp out there on the mound. There's a couple of different roster moves that were made today that might interest Cubs fans.
Yes, sir.
For
yes,
a lot
sir.
Of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about all of that next here on.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omacid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omacid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Hi, Boog.
We're a very important radio show, you know?
Yeah, you are. So very important.
I mean, do people have any idea?
That was my sincerity there. You want me another reading of that?
Yeah.
I'm going to count you down, okay?
In three, two, one.
So very important.
Oh, perfect. That feels nice.
Yeah.
Afternoons on The Score.
I think we're all excited to have Nico back in the lineup and what that does for us and kind of how that fits in. You know, you're gonna see it today with the lineup we're gonna run out there. So I think it's gonna be pretty close to the opening day lineup. So we're excited to have him back, and I think we all believe that this lineup has a chance to do some special things this year.
Ian Happ on the midday show talking about Nico Horner. The team is rejoined. Let's put it that way. The team has rejoined Nico Horner.
Came back home to Nico. Nico didn't have to hang with those AAA kids and talk like he's Crash Davis about what it's like in the show. No. Cubs came back home and reunited with the man, and he's been in the lineup just about every game, and he's in that lineup today. Damn Skippy. Good to hear Ian Happ today, wasn't it?
I really enjoyed talking baseball with Ian Happ, and I'm glad that he's still committed to being on the midday show, because I think that he's so smart. And hearing him talking about hitting specifically, but even when you ask him about fielding, because, you know, he's done pretty well in that regard too. I love the way that he talks about it. I love the way that he's talked about the communication with Pete Crow Armstrong in center field and how that needs to continue to develop. So I'm glad that he's a resource for the midday show, as Nico Horner is going to be for us here on Spiegel and Holmes.
Absolutely. And Nico, last year, he hit two a lot in this lineup. And in his life, he's always been one of those kind of Craig Biggio-style two hitters. And you hoped the offense would explode to Craig Biggio's standards during his career. But then last year, Council at one point started hitting him six. And Nico took to it as kind of a secondary leadoff thing, or at least a mindset, if you need that kind of mindset for it. And this lineup today, I want to make sure Cubs fans are aware of this lineup that is out there today. As Ian said in the cut there from middays, this is pretty damn close to the opening day lineup. And this one, if you were bothered at all by some things in the Cubs lineup in Tokyo, like Matt Shaw being ahead of Dansby Swanson,
I don't know.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that now, and you don't have to worry about Matt Shaw being asked to do some stuff in the middle of the lineup necessarily just yet. This lineup with Happ in center, and then Tucker, who's DHing today, or is Tucker in right field, I think?
No,
and then
Happ is in left.
Oh, okay.
In left, Tucker in right.
Okay.
Suzuki is your DH, Bush at first, Dansby Swanson at shortstop, Nico Horner at second base, Pete Crow Armstrong in center field,
of course,
Shaw at third, Amaya is behind the plate.
And the batting order is the same as what I had. I just had some of the defensive positions transcribed. But I love Dansby up there at five, and he's already got an RBI ground rule double today. I think he's going to have a big start, and I hope a big year. So I like him up there at five a lot. And then Nico and PCA with Shaw at down at eight, and then Amaya at nine. I would have been fine with Shaw at nine, too. I think Amaya is going to have himself a decent start here as well. But that is a better lineup in terms of top to bottom, and it's also more sensible in terms of a couple of spots there, especially between five and eight. I like that a hell of a lot better than what we saw in Tokyo.
Isn't it a little soon to be a lineupista, Spiegs?
I don't think I'm being a lineupista. I think this is opening day, and what it speaks to is the difference between those games. You know, like those two games, man, in the middle of spring training, like we've been like you talked about, it's like it was a really weird ask, and the Cubs were not up for it on some ways. Like they chose to piggyback with starters. Ben Brown is your fifth starter today. Ben Brown was your bulk reliever piggybacking in the second of those games. You know, Nico wasn't even ready. So Birdie was starting. Now Birdie is your, you know, this is a much more sensible team. Birdie is your depth piece, and not expected to be your starter at second base on opening day.
I just feel like it might be a little, I saw people being upset about it online, and I'm like, guys, we can't already be here, can we? Like the idea of going through the lineup and saying this is out of place and Craig Council needs to really put the lineup together in the right way. I feel like while he would prefer to have a set lineup every day, that there's going to be some mixing and matching as the season goes on. And I support that until you feel like you find the lineup that works.
But this is him showing you what he thinks of his team after an entire offseason and an entire spring training. Tokyo was not a fair representation of what he actually thought about his team. So this is your starting point. So it carries more weight to me than a lineup from day to day. Of course, what you're saying is right. He should fiddle and diddle and mix it all up as the matchups see fit. But this is, having looked at an entire spring training, this is what he thinks is best from the get-go.
Were you guys big fans of Fiddle Faddle back in the day?
I loved Fiddle Faddle. And screaming Yellow
Zonkers.
My
mom used to sit me in front of the TV. I watched Fiddle and Diddle all day.
My dad told me to stay away from Diddle.
Hey, buddy.
He said Fiddle's fine, but stay away from Diddle.
Especially when Uncle Ernie was a guest on there. You got to be careful when Uncle Ernie is on that show. No, so there was three, right? There was Fiddle Faddle, there was Screaming Yellow Zonkers, and what was the third one?
Crunch and Munch?
That's it. Thank you. You nailed that. God, Lawrence, that was phenomenal.
Quick, if you're outside of our demo, call right now and tell us what it is.
You don't know what Crunch and Munch is? Or Fiddle Faddle? Or Screaming Yellow Zonkers? What the hell? They're all better than Cracker Jack. All three of them just, like, leave Cracker Jack in the dust, because Cracker Jack's kind of lame, to be honest.
I'm not even going to say it.
No, say it. Say it.
I'm just saying that a former Bears coach once told you what the secret ingredient to making Cracker Jack great was.
Oh, penis. Yeah, you shouldn't have said that. You're right, dude. That was Matt Nagy, Ten. He said penis.
You got to let Shane say that.
Penis and Cracker Jack. Yeah, you shouldn't have said that. You should have texted one of us. We would have said it for you.
Thank you.
All right.
I'll remember that next time.
Buy me some penis and Cracker Jack.
That's the secret ingredient.
That's the worst Cracker Jack I ever had. That one box.
That's not a prize you want. Or maybe you do. I shouldn't judge. There's no kink shaming on this show.
Absolutely no kink shaming on this show. It's exactly right. So the roster move that that Cub fans should be interested in is that Cam Smith just made the Astros. The former number one pick that they traded away along with Isaac Paredes, who's going to start at third base, and Hayden Wesneski, who's going to be the fifth starter for Houston. And those don't bother me. Those two don't bother me. But Cam Smith is a little scary. What do we do if Cam Smith has a better year than Kyle Tucker? How does that register exactly?
Well, I do think that is on the table for doom scrollers who are Cubs fans of like, yes. Wait a minute. This guy was good enough to make the roster right now with an organization that has been better than our organization over the last decade? I would imagine that would feel kind of scary.
Cam Smith is turning heads with the Astros in camp. Some of the quotes that came out in the Athletic piece the other day, the profile on Cam Smith, did you see any of these? The infield coach or the bench coach, Omar Lopez, is like, obviously he's older than Carlos Correa, but when I had Carlos, it's the same way that Cam Smith goes about his business.
Uh-oh.
Mauricio Dubon says this. He's the best player in the spring training camp we got right now.
Uh-oh.
He's in the cages working. It's only been 5 weeks, but what I've seen in 5 weeks, everyone likes him. And then here's the one, Mauricio Dubon with his head out over his skis. Here we go. Quote, you can quote me on this. When he figures it out, when he has an idea of what they're going to do to him in the big leagues, I think he's going to be the next 60-homer guy.
That's, look.
Come on.
Yes, yeah, that's taking it too far because the list of 60-homer guys is very small.
Are you questioning the hyperbole of Mauricio Dubon again? Are you doing that again?
I just think that even Ohtani didn't hit 60 last year.
No, it's a good point.
60
is a good point.
60 is a lot.
What if he's 40? What if he's 40 homers?
I think even if he's 25 homers, you might have a problem.
I mean, I don't know how much he's going to play this year. That's the choice. Is like they
it's
put him out
there. It's an interesting choice too by them because this is someone who doesn't have a ton of experience, but they must see something that makes them think that they can get on the good foot with this young man right now.
Hey, man, there's a bunch of people out there. There's a bunch of organizations, and I hope the White Sox are taking note, who are just moving their players to the big leagues. The Angels have a guy who made the bullpen. He's never thrown a pitch in the minors. Got drafted last year and was sitting in recovery, was so good in the spring that they're like, all right, yeah, let's go. Let's just go ahead and get that started. I mean, Cam Smith has 134 professional plate appearances. 134 last year. That's it. And the Astros are like, yeah, why not? We're trying to win. Let's go for it. So time is now if you're trying to win, and I guess that's where my White Sox comp falls apart.
Yes. Speaking of the White Sox.
Sir.
I said something 3 weeks ago, and I stand by it today. I feel even more strongly about this thing that I said 3 weeks ago. Okay. And it has to do with the White Sox. So I'm going to say it in bold font.
Do it.
Next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
All right, well, we navigated that pretty well. I was worried. But I'm always worried.
So. That's your thing.
Yeah, that's my bit.
Afternoons on The Score.
Not going to take long for the league to say, okay, he's not swinging at those.
But he's swinging at that one. A no-doubter deep to left. Goodbye. A three-run shot for Luis Robert Jr. And he looks like he is ready for opening day on Thursday. A solo home run yesterday, a three-run shot today.
And I'm looking right into the camera, and I'm going to see it again.
Trade Luis Robert. He has had a phenomenal spring, and he's healthy. He is going to get it. He is hitting bombs. And it's funny because I guess they had asked him on like when he thought the White Sox would be good again. And he kind of like chuckled and basically said, well, you know, we'll see. We'll see where things stand with my contract at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Trade Luis Robert while he is good, healthy, and there is need from multiple teams around Major League Baseball, Cincinnati Reds, that need very good center field play. Philadelphia Phillies, someone trade for Luis Robert.
I don't know how much those teams want to do it. That's the problem. You named two good ones. You named two good possibilities. Phillies are loaded with a lot of money on the roster, so why not a little bit more? That's one that makes some sense, but they might have to wait, and you as a White Sox person wanting them to trade him might have to wait until the Phillies fall behind either the Braves and or the Mets in that division a little
bit at this
point. I
just don't want the White Sox to then get stuck with an injured or bad Luis Robert.
I hear you, man. I hear you.
The way out of this is to start making moves. And he is more than likely either not going to be healthy enough or good enough by the time you're ready to win. If you're a team that's ready to win now, he is worth the risk because he's a five-war player if he's healthy.
The Cincinnati Reds are the one that doesn't make any sense, except for the fact that they must have decided they're just not going to add the money. They're just not going to do it. So if you're the White Sox,
but if you're the Reds, like, aren't you in your window, Speeds?
Oh,
like,
of course you are.
You finally did the thing where you've got all of the prospects up to the major leagues. Make your move.
There's sometimes teams don't bother to do that. I'll give you another example of a team not bothering to do that. The Baltimore Orioles have all of their young position players good at the same time. They've done it. They've done what they dreamed of doing. You know who their ace is? Zach Eflin. Zach Eflin is their ace. They haven't gone out. They went and got Burns, but they didn't re-up him, and they got nobody, man. I know Grayson Rodriguez may be supposed to be their guy, but he's hurt. And so, like, sometimes teams do not close the deal and finish the build. And certainly we are familiar with that in this town. The Reds are not finishing the possibility of building themselves a winner. Incredibly disappointing. The one thing I'll say, though, is this too, Lawrence. I don't know if the league thinks quite as highly about Luis Robert as we have thought that they do. You remember I brought to you the other day the Aces Project from The Athletic with all the starting pitchers?
Yes. And you then
and where, yep, where the locals ranked. We talked about that and went through the Cubs and the Sox. I never got a chance to bring up the position player tiers, the MLB position player tiers. See if you can guess where Luis Robert, of course, the only White Sox player, falls among these tiers, okay?
Okay.
These are the top 100 position players in baseball based on their expected all-around hitting, fielding, and base running value for the season. Best of the best, no Luis Robert. There's only six in there. MVP contenders, no Luis Robert. There's only 13 in there. Kyle Tucker's in there, by the way. Then you get all-stars. There's 18 players in that tier. Would you expect Luis Robert?
Yeah, because he's yes, I would expect him to be in there.
He's not there. For what it's worth, Alex Bregman is in there. Steady and solid. That's the next 23 players.
Well, that definitely does not describe Luis Robert, so I get that, yeah.
And he's not in there. Dansby Swanson is in there. Then there's this 30-something regulars that are pretty good. There's 16 in there. No Luis Robert. There's Ian Happ and Seiya Suzuki. Then you get to 20-something regulars. These are the bottom 24 people in the top 100 position players. Nico Horner is in that group, and Luis Robert Jr. is in that group. That is way lower than I expected based on the year from 2 years ago.
For a guy that won a gold glove and was an all-star.
And got MVP votes.
That's crazy.
It's a bad list.
But Shane, this is how he's thought of around the league. This is like because of all the injuries and because of some of the plate discipline issues, which are better this spring, but it's a tiny little sample and it's only spring. A lot of teams around the league don't think much of Luis Robert.
Is it the boxing video? Is that what did it? Is that what soured everyone on Luis Robert? Was that boxing video where it looked like he had never taken a boxing lesson?
It's too bad when you got a physique like that. It feels like you ought to be able to hold your own in a boxing video. No, I think it's all the injuries and it's the incredibly woeful plate discipline. Like dead last in swing rate over the last 4 or 5 years. Much better this spring, but it's just the spring.
So look, over his career, his OPS has been 790. That's well above league average.
Yep.
And the thing that's dragging it down is how bad he was last year. Everything else is league average or above. 738, 946, 746, 857. Maybe it is. Maybe we see him and we value him more because we've seen the genius in his game. It's part of the reason I will say I don't trust him, and maybe the league doesn't either. But It's another reason why I'm like, he gotta go. Because you can't hope that by the trade deadline he will have been healthy enough and played well enough for them to get what they need back to maybe spur on the idea of moving him.
They should eat that money. They should eat money and send him to Cincinnati
and get the best prospect.
100%. If there's a real prospect package that's offered from Cincinnati, and we know this was reported by Kenny Rosenthal in The Athletic a few weeks back, that the amount of money the new team was going to have to pay in his contract had not been decided. So you know those conversations are happening. They should eat plenty of it. I hadn't realized, by the way, that that the White Sox manager deserved to be in the list that I had in categories last week when it was former MLB players and former NFL players who had played in the NCAA tournament. I did not realize that Will Venable deserved to be in that list. I had no idea.
He does, and Chuck Garfine asked him about his days when he was a hooper.
I don't know how many major league managers have ever played basketball in the NCAA tournament. You might be the first one. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, a lot of these guys are, sneaky good athletes, and, you know, I don't know all their backgrounds, but, yeah, you know, going to the tournament was really special. It was part of the reason, you know, outside of the academics that I wanted to go to Princeton is because of their tradition of going to the tournament.
Venable with the first bucket of the night. Princeton off to a 2-0 lead. They come in with an 8-4 record.
This makes it very simple. Duke has been able to do that, keep the ball from reversing all evening, and that's why Princeton's had a difficult time, except when Will Venable has tried to beat people off the bounce.
Unbelievable. How does Tanny find Len Elmore doing a Will Venable basketball highlight? That's crazy.
Because he's the best. God. He spends a lot of time. Our meeting was short today, so Tanny had a lot of time to look up Princeton hoops.
I mean, that's amazing. So, all right, well, a manager, that's a hooper. That's impressive. And we know Winston was a Bear. That's a hell of a family right there.
Yeah, they're doing all right. They got everything covered. It's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk college basketball. Let's talk college coaches. This was an interesting weekend for college coaches, and some of them rose to the occasion and took their flowers. And some of them, they can't get out of their own way. We'll explain next here on The Score.